Chapter 25. I would love to say my rescue came in the nick of time. The toes, the soles of my feet, my fingers, the palms. All of that was terrible. The worst physical ordeal of my life. I'd just love to tell you how I was saved the worst of it just as that little shit Victus pulled away my loincloth and grasped my left testicle. The chaos and ensuing destruction of Kinnegad did not happen in time to save my left testicle. Or my right one. It did happen, however, when my absurdly long zombie penis was halfway through being inexpertly sliced in half like a hot dog being sheared by a blunt spork. After every few cuts, the clerics cast a particularly nasty spell called Preserve Injury, which allowed them to heal my life points without actually closing up the wound. It would have been useful when I was first feeding Banksy, but I could think of no other possible use for it. Except for torture. The Preserve Injury spell did blunt the pain of the injury somewhat, but that ended up being more of a curse than a blessing. By the time Victus had sliced my third toe, peeling it open like a pistachio, I was in so much screaming, "Why am I not passing out?" pain, I barely registered new injuries to my person. I looked down, surprised to see him working on my fourth toe while I was still screaming about my second one. After he was done with my big toe, I was wailing and sobbing and begging for death. The cleric cast the Preserve Injury spell, and a welcome, glorious warmth spread across my foot. I felt myself gasping, gulping in air, my heart thrashing in my chest. My toes still ached. They itched as if on fire. Victus brushed by to move to my next foot, sending a fresh spasm of pain through me. But the pain on its own was manageable, like an injury that was several days old. That had the unfortunate effect of allowing me to focus entirely on this new pain. From my toes, he moved to my fingers on my right hand, then the hand itself, which he sliced at an upward angle, starting from outside the inner wrist to a point below my index finger, allowing my hand to flap open loosely. It had the effect of losing all feeling in that hand, and the bottom half of my palm screamed, though the sensation wasn't nearly as bad as the destruction of my fingers. He left my mechanical left hand alone for now. My feet were peeled in a different manner. He cut from the bottom of the heel, carefully easing the knife through the bone and only halfway up the depth of my foot. He cut along the center of the sole, ending at the space between my index and middle toe. He then peeled the foot open like an upside-down baked potato. I felt bones and tendons snap and crack and splinter. I can say without a doubt, this was the most excruciating physical pain I had ever felt. It was like the death sequence, the fingers and toes, the cutting open of my own stomach, all of it combined at once and focused on a single, solitary spot of my body, and amplified 100-fold. My mind was doing this odd stuttering thing, like a needle on a record player skipping and scratching, desperately trying to find the proper groove. I kept moving between screaming pain, saying, "No, no, no," and, "You little fucker, fuck you, you little fucker," and having my mind wandering off, finding itself in a loop. I pictured the kangaroo poster on Ruth's wall when she was a child. I kept thinking of it, of how it ripped when I tried to remove it when we moved. Her mom had left us for Arizona, for another man, and we'd been forced to find a smaller apartment. Ruth had accepted her mother leaving with a quiet, matter-of-fact stoicism that was unusual for an 8-year-old. But she had wailed when I tore that poster. I kept thinking of it, of the poster. My mind taking refuge in this odd place. I'd crumpled to the floor that night, sobbing for the first time in my adult life after spending hours scouring the internet for a replacement. I hadn't thought of that in years. And it was ridiculous I was thinking of it now. But I clutched onto the terrible memory, thinking of that moment over and over. Of that stupid fucking kangaroo poster. But then, Victus moved to my testicles. One does not simply slice a testicle in half and leave it remaining attached to the body in two distinctive pieces, any more than someone can slice a raw egg in half, shell and all, hoping to keep all the pieces attached and within. As such, there was a special tool made just for this part of the ceremony. I was in too much terror and pain to get the best look at it. But my first impression was the device was like a handheld cherry picker. I fear I have already described too much of this process. Let me just say, after the second testicle was obliterated, left hanging on my body like an apple that had been crushed and juiced, rotting away, I felt that record needle of sanity snap right off. It was like a physical thing in my mind. I screamed, I wailed, I foamed at the mouth. I had to wait for a good long time after that second testicle before he could move on. My mind was finally tumbling back into coherence just as Victus grasped my flaccid cock in his left hand and pulled it taut, like he was attempting to yank a turtle's head from his shell. For his part, the boy went through the actions of the sacrament with determined ferocity. Despite his earlier eagerness, he showed no pleasure or displeasure in the process. His cuts were uneven and haphazard, but he did not hesitate. And so far, nothing was actually cut off of me, which would require him to start over. I was absurdly grateful for that. The clerics knew exactly what they were doing. They cast their terrible preserve injury as Victus split open the gray head of my worm surgeon cock. Victus paused, the knife curving, coming dangerously close to severing off the top half of my member.
Be fucking careful!
But the boy wasn't paying attention to me. His head was turned, his grip on me slackened, causing my dick to cut itself as it retracted like an eel back into its cave. I finally registered that the screaming I heard wasn't just my own.
Oh, good heavens, everybody fucking run!
Oh my god!
A massive frog with a set of antlers jumped into the clearing and shot his tongue out. The long, wart-covered tongue splattered onto the chest of a groundling cleric. The tongue held fast. The cleric flew off his feet as he was pulled to the monster. The man folded in on himself, cracking like a twig. The frog swallowed him whole. The groundling was a few hands larger than the frog, but it didn't matter. He disappeared completely into the frog's mouth. The frog chewed a few times, its mouth sliding to the side like that of a cow. My eyes focused on the frog's tag.
Familiar. Player. Jink.
The frog's tongue lashed onto Victus's back. The boy looked up at me, and our eyes met. His loose left hand grasped my dick like it was a life preserver. He opened his mouth as if to say something. The knife went flying. Victus's hopeless grip failed him. He went one direction. I rebounded back in the harness, bouncing like the surface of a trampoline. The top half of my penis flew straight up like a damn bottle rocket. I watched it curl into the air, spinning, trailing blood. It landed with a splotch on the tiles, only to be trampled a moment later by a rush of screaming groundlings. I was in too much screaming pain to see what happened next, but I did note the boy was not swallowed by the frog, with children being indestructible by other players, and their pets, apparently, he was not swallowed. He ran off, screeching. The crowd scattered. The frog bounded off, chasing a pair of particularly plump groundlings. Holy shit. He's here. The Canadian guy was here. But then I looked down at the ruined half of my body and stopped caring about Jenk. The paralysis spell was starting to wear off. I felt the now familiar crackling tingle that indicated I'd soon regain full motion. But that did not matter. My life points flowed out of me like water from a sieve. With no clerics nearby to heal me, I would bleed out in minutes.
Hurry up! Hurry up! Hurry up!
Blood cascaded from my crotch like a fire hose. The burning heat of death would be like a spa day compared to this. A mech ran past, his or her features obscured by the lowered blast shield. A group of mechs took up positions around the entrance of the outside of the giant badger head, a mere 50 feet away. Death would come any moment. I felt myself slipping away. I pulled up the debt menu. God damn it, I thought. It was still there, not yet canceled. Why the hell not? When I died, I'd come right back here. I looked at my ruined testicles and cock, the splayed ends of my toes curled up like a dead sea creature. That was okay, I decided. If I was going to face this crazy jank asshole, then I would rather be fully intact. And then he was there, as if I had summoned him.
Jank. Player. Level. Unknown.
The wolf waved his hand. And my life bar froze. I was not healed. My injuries remained.
You have been decelerated.
No!
My health bar had paused right at the edge. The corners of my vision remained red, pulsing like a heartbeat. I wasn't paralyzed like before, but I still couldn't move. The spell he'd hit me with, deceleration, seemed to slow everything down except my ability to talk. My arms felt like they were stuck in molasses. He stood before me, his hands on his hips, appraising me. A brown, well-muscled wolf man. He wasn't nearly as decked out as Anatolian Smash South had been. He wore what looked like a pair of leg bracers over his black jeans. They were some sort of mechanical enhancement, probably something that let him jump. His left hand was also mechanical, though instead of the circle of four grabbers I had, he wore a metallic glove that looked like a chrome version of his own hand. He wore twin bandoliers over his otherwise bare, broad chest and had a pair of handguns holstered around his waist, making him look like a deranged werewolf cowboy. He did not carry a special edition Epiviper pulse rifle. His left eye appeared to be cybernetic, and it focused on me, servos twisting and turning within. I realized then that all sound had cut off. A flash of light caught the corner of my eye. We were encased in some sort of semicircle shield that encompassed the entire pavilion. To my right, a group of mechs silently poured fire at us, but the translucent glass shield protected us. These were the mechs protecting the temple. One of the mechs disappeared, screaming silently as the frog crunched him. My life ticked down again. One or two more percentage points, and I'd be gone. Jank's gaze fell upon me, on my ruined body, and he examined the crushed and ruined half-cock smushed against the tiles. He poked at it with a booted foot.
Well, this is awkward.
He spoke amiably, casually, like he was someone who just sat down next to me at a bar. He did not have a menacing voice, which made him seem even more terrifying. He ground the smushed meat even further into the tiles. Suddenly, the frog was there, leaping up against the leg of Jank. She was completely covered in blood and guts. A long tendril of gore hung from her antler, dripping. Jank patted her head.
Good girl.
The frog noticed the gore of my severed penis on the ground. She slurped it up.
Are you circumcised in the real world? You might find this interesting. So you probably know in some bris ceremonies, the rabbi guy, the moel, he lops the newborn's foreskin off, right? But did you know there's a sect of rabbi guys, they actually cut the foreskin, and then they suck the blood away with their mouths? Can you believe that? People say I'm fucked up, but when I heard that, I just laughed and laughed. A bunch of years ago, some rabbi gave a couple babies herpes by sucking on their injured wieners. One of the babies actually died. Did you know that? Actually, I don't know if you have to be a rabbi to be a moel. Do you know? Do you?
What?
Do you know if someone has to be a rabbi to be a moel?
No, I have no idea.
The wolf-headed Jenk loomed over me.
This is probably the most entertaining circumcision I've ever attended. I mean, I haven't been to many, but this is definitely up there. How about you, Duke?
I've been to better.
Oh, this one is funny. You're the artist, right? Clara's pet. I'd heard Anatoly was finally bringing you in here. You sure have gotten yourself into quite the pickle. You know what's funny? In the normal version of this game, people went out of their way to get themselves amplified. It's not easy to get the groundlings mad enough to do it. The thing is, whenever you get tortured or imprisoned, it triggers a cutscene. Time zooms by, and you can only watch via third person. There are pages and pages on the internet of people trying to hack the game, so it'll let them experience what only you have managed to do. There are some sick fucks out there. I call them pain junkies. They would give anything to experience what you just did. And you've done it at 105%. Well, half of it. Man, if you ever manage to get out of here, you'll be a folk hero. Like the Captain Sully of VR torture.
Tick. My health bar went even lower. I wouldn't escape if I died, but at least my body would be repaired. Come on, come on.
You only have one brand. Are you really using Anatoly's base as your regeneration spot? That's why you were here, wasn't it? You came here to get a new brand, but instead you got yourself peeled. That means Clara is back inside of Bast, too.
My new brand was in the center of my back, which was pressed against the harness. He couldn't see it.
Whatever you are up to, it's pointless, fruitless, aimless, and even a bit futile. This is a big, scary game. There's no winning, only losing. And when you lose here...
He made a point to look down at the remnants of my disfigured body.
Okay, I have no interest in you. But we do have a mutual friend. So I'm going to close these caves off. Make sure you can't come back and get a brand. I'm sorry about that. But first, Olga here is going to eat you. When you regenerate, I want you to pass a message on to our Clara. Can you do that for me? It's the least you can do. After all, I saved you before they got to your teeth. Trust me, and I'm an expert in this sort of thing. This pain you feel with your balls and fingers and feet, that is nothing compared to what the splitting of the teeth would have been like. Not the way they do it here. So, anyway, please pass a message on to Claire for me. Tell her, you know who misses her mommy. But not to worry, she's in great hands.
How about you, Claire? You have died. Half your experience toward level 18 lost.
Pain.
You have died 13 times. Due to debts incurred, your regeneration spot has been overridden. Entering Kinnegad.
I remained attached to the harness, in the same place as before. My clothes returned, but they were the ones I started the game with. My leather harness that gave a storage bonus was gone forever. But my fingers, my toes, my feet, and most importantly, my cock, had all been restored to their former glory. Jenk and the circular shield that had protected him was gone. He and Olga the frog had wandered off somewhere. He must have assumed I'd have regenerated back in Bast. But he couldn't have gone too far. It had only been 2.5 minutes. I looked around, seeking him. The place was abandoned. Burning husks of mechs surrounded me. The pavilion was painted red with groundling blood. Jank and his frog had killed everyone in town. But the NPCs would be back at any moment. Before, Madame Throb had regenerated right away. But had she regenerated that rapidly because I had died too? I hadn't thought of that before. If Jank had killed the NPCs, would they stay dead longer? I knew a few other games did something similar, but either way, the NPCs would return. What would happen then? Would they start the ceremony again? I had to get out of here. I grasped at the strap holding my chest with my powerful left hand.
Self-escape is not possible until your debt is paid or canceled.
God damn it!
I read the debt notification again. It would only be canceled once the day had passed, once the child died, or once the ceremony was completed. Completed by Gulch. But Madame Throb had killed little Gulch, hadn't she? I looked off toward the temple. The mechs guarding the entrance were splattered all over the place. Throb had brought the kid in there somewhere. He must not be dead yet. That meant I'd have to wait until the end of the day before the debt would go away. Would it take that long for the NPCs to come back? I doubted it. What was happening now? My mini-map was awash in red. I pulled up the main map, zooming out to get a better view. The howling was coming from Orthrus, Jank's two-headed kaiju. It had moved from the fields to the east to directly above our position. Then I remembered what Jank had said.
So I'm going to close these caves off. Make sure you can't come back and get a brand. I'm sorry about that.
He had control of his kaiju, making the giant two-headed dog cave in this entire town. I wondered if that would finally cancel the debt. I welcomed the idea, even if it meant dying once again. Anything to get out of here without having to go through any more of the amplification ceremony. The distinctive hissing of a mech suit punctuated through the distant sound of roaring. My heart started to thrash as I struggled in my restraints.
Your lichen friend did not try to save you.
All around us, rocks continued to plummet from the ceiling. A large mech clunked into my view. The unit's blast shield was down, obscuring the driver. I was expecting this to be Madame Throb. I was surprised to see it was not.
He's not my friend.
My eyes caught the name over the mech suit. Jazz. She was not wearing the same type of suit that Madame Throb and the rest of the guard wore. This suit was a head bigger than the others and wider, too. But it also looked older, more worn. It did not appear to have any built-in weapons. Hoses threaded from the back and into the center, making it look more like an old-school diving suit. The suit wasn't armed, but she did appear to have a weapon. Her suit carried a giant metallic block on the back. It was the size of a dishwasher and appeared to be a solid hunk of metal. A chain hung from the side, each link as wide as my arm. The thing was some sort of flail. The whole thing appeared to be outrageously heavy, and I kept waiting for her to topple backward. The restraint around my waist snapped off, followed by the one at my shoulder as Jazz easily removed them with her mechanical hand. I fell forward, hitting the ground hard.
You have been broken free of incarceration.
The moment I hit the ground, my pack and rifle returned, settling over my shoulder with a satisfying weight. Relief flooded me. I was free. For now. A quick glance showed me the debt was still active, which meant if I died again, I'd still regenerate in this stupid town. The ceremonial knife still sat there on the tiles. I picked it up. The knife hummed in my hands. It was more a surgical tool than a proper weapon. It had a long, silver handle and a short, glowing energy blade as thin as a razor. It cut through bone like butter. It had a slide on the side, and I could make the blade about 7 inches long, or I could retract it completely. So less like a scalpel and more like a box cutter. I retracted the blade and slipped it into my belt as quickly as I could. If Jazz was going to kill me, I wanted it in my inventory so I'd keep it upon regeneration.
Knife of Amplification. Used in the Sacrament of Amplification, this knife is able to finely pierce and slice organic material with precision. Plus 20% celestial prayer points when worn.
I waited for a fatal blow from the mech, but it never came. I looked up, and the mech stood over me. The blast shield retracted, revealing the woman groundling. Her eyes were rimmed red. The weird brass skullcap was gone, and she had what appeared to be a square metal patch woven into her forehead. I wasn't sure if she had the patch before or not, but I didn't think so. Blood oozed from the metal square. This was an upgrade she had just installed onto herself.
You're going to help me get Gulch back.
I thought they killed him. I knew he couldn't be dead. But what else could I say?
He may not be dead. He has been training against this possibility. He may yet live within the Oblation Chamber. Kinnegad is about to collapse. We need to get into the temple and rescue him before it's too late.
A new quest notification flashed. I stood to my full height. I still had to look up to face Jazz. Her mech vibrated and coughed like an engine with a bad valve.
You owe me this.
No. While I needed to level up as rapidly as possible, it was crucial I get back to Clara and Banksy. Now that this jank guy knew we were here, everything was going to be much more difficult. I didn't have time for side quests like this.
I don't know you shit.
The mech reached forward, picked me up like a rag doll, and turned and walked into the open mouth of the Badger Temple.
Let me the fuck down! God damn it!
Entering Moritaskus, mouth region. Warning, Guardian Moritaskus is in poor health.
I stared stupidly at the notification as we walked along the pews. Jazz's mech was so wide, we cleaved through the room, throwing the benches aside like a boat cutting waves.
Deep dive activating. World map is not available during a deep dive. Gross anatomy map activating. Surgery menu activating. Frame vision now available.
Multiple purple waypoints opened up in my vision as the Guardian map activated. We passed the pulpit, and she pushed me through the curtain that hung at the back of the altar. Darkness washed over us as we passed through the temple and into the fleshy back of the kaiju's mouth. We stood over a dark precipice, the dark cavern of the kaiju's throat. Heat blasted me as the Guardian exhaled. A terrible, fetid stench, like rotten cabbage, overwhelmed me.
Hold on!
What?
She jumped, and we fell, swallowed by the darkness.